Bueno, les recordamos que Mirar Morir es un excelente documental del periodista Temoris Greco que revela el papel que jugó el ejército en la desaparición de los 43 jóvenes de Ayotzinapa, y le vamos a dejar la dirección, las direcciones en donde pueden acudir. Una se encuentra en Boyle Heights, que es para, tenemos ahí un cupo para 60 personas, que es el 26 de agosto a partir de las 7 de la noche. La dirección es la casita 0101-2009 East First Street, Los Ángeles, California 90033. Y la otra va a ser en el Valle de San Fernando, en el Salón de Eventos de la Iglesia Metodista Unida, que es el 15345 Ryan Street, North Hills, California, 91343. Llámenos y van a obtener su boleto, y comuníquense al 818-985-5735 para recibir su boleto con la mínima donación de $25 y se vuelve usted miembro de esta estación de radio. Bueno, vamos a pasar aquí con nuestros invitados. Me estaban comentando los jóvenes Brenda, ¿no? Uno y Deina, que son los fundadores de el Oaxacan College Initiative, ¿no? ¿De qué se trata esto, Brenda?
Sí, la iniciativa colegial Oaxaca en español es también fundada por otro estudiante de doctorado, Luis Sánchez López. Y básicamente esta es una página que tenemos en Facebook, ¿no? Y es para ayudar a los jóvenes oaxaqueños, ¿no? Que están aplicando para la universidad acá en los Estados Unidos. Y entonces le estamos recordando que ya se acerca la temporada para aplicar a las universidades de Cal State Universities, ¿no? CSUs. También a las UCs, las universidades de California.
Y universidades privadas.
Y las
también.
Universidades privadas, ¿no? Y Deina va a dar más información sobre el grupo de Oaxacan College Initiative, o Iniciativa Colegial Oaxaca, para esos padres y estudiantes que están interesados o necesitan ayuda para aplicar.
Y para reiterar, nos pueden encontrar en Facebook. La página se llama Oaxacan College Initiative, o Iniciativa Colegial Oaxaqueña. Le vamos a poner los dos nombres para que nos puedan encontrar más fácilmente, porque no lo hicimos bilingüe, aunque esa es una de nuestras metas.
Claro.
Como dijo Brenda, junto conmigo y nuestro compañero Luis Sánchez López y otra compañera jalisciense que nos ayuda, Janet López Cárdenas, que actualmente trabaja en la Universidad de Estatal de California, Northridge, en como oficina de admisión. Tratamos de hacer talleres para los jóvenes y para los padres para que tengan más información sobre cómo es aplicar al colegio, porque a veces no tenemos esa información como hijos de inmigrantes y a veces las escuelas no nos proveen toda la información que necesitamos. Y el propósito de nuestro grupo es incrementar el número de jóvenes oaxaqueños en la universidad, y para lograr este propósito estamos ofreciendo talleres gratuitos para ayudar a los estudiantes a matricularse en la universidad y para los padres para proveerles información para cómo pueden ellos ayudar a sus hijos a con sus metas universitarias. Y uno de los talleres que hacemos son sobre la aplicación o también sobre los exámenes que tienen que tomar los muchachos en la escuela secundaria para poder aplicar a la universidad, y estos son los SATs y los ACTs, y tenemos un tutor específicamente que ayuda con las matemáticas, y él estudió economía creo que se dice en español,
bueno,
y es muy bueno con las matemáticas y ha dado un taller, pero necesitamos tener más interés saber que tenemos interés para hacer estos talleres para poder programarlos, porque él viene de Irvine, a donde yo voy a la escuela. Y nada más queremos que, si están interesados, que se unan a nuestro Facebook, el Oaxacan College Initiative, y nos pueden mandar un mensaje ahí que están interesados o que están aplicando a la universidad, y ya nos pondremos en contacto con ellos para darles más información.
Información sumamente importante para nuestros jóvenes que se están preparando, y afortunadamente ha habido un empoderamiento de los jóvenes oaxaqueños en varios ámbitos. Edgar, a ver si nos puedes hacer nuevamente la invitación y para la actividad de Señorita Oaxaca.
Sí, el certamen Señorita Oaxaca se llevará a cabo este domingo 21 de agosto a partir de las 6 de la tarde en el 831 Sur La Brea Avenue, Los Ángeles, California, 90036, en el 831 Sur de La Brea Avenue. El salón es Candela, mejor conocido como Leonardos de la Brea. Ahí estaremos en el certamen Señorita Oaxaca. Habrá una convivencia como referentemente siempre lo tenemos todos los oaxaqueños después de todo este certamen. Hay un baile, convive la gente, las familias. Es algo, aparte de un espectáculo, una convivencia muy hermosa entre todos los oaxaqueños, porque llegan diferentes comunidades a apoyar a su señorita. Llega gente del Istmo, de la Sierra, de la Mixteca, no sé de dónde, de los valles. Entonces llega gente a apoyar a cada una de sus preferidas. Se pone muy emocionante. Pues esperamos a toda la comunidad y vaya y apoya a la que crea usted que va a ser la señorita Oaxaca 2016-2017. Ahí los esperamos a partir de las 6 de la tarde, este domingo 21 de agosto, a las 6 de la tarde.
Se reúnen nuevamente las diferentes regiones del estado de Oaxaca para conformar la novena, ¿no? La región oaxacaliforniana, ¿no? Pues tenemos mucho que hablar de eso en los próximos programas. Y nuevamente les recordamos que estamos en la recaudación de fondos. Comuníquese al área 818-985-5735 y vamos, en estos momentos estamos dando por $25, les estamos dando un boleto que le va a permitir ver el documental Mirar Morir, el cual trata sobre la desaparición de los estudiantes en Ayotzinapa. Además, con esa donación obtiene una membresía de la radio. Y recuerde, esta radio comunitaria le da la voz al pueblo, le da la voz a la gente que, pues desafortunadamente, no se les abren las puertas en otros lados como en los medios comerciales, ¿no? Al contrario, en vez de apoyar a la comunidad, pues están sometiendo a través de esos comerciales, a través de esas ventas, a través de productos que para nada benefician, ¿no? Al contrario, perjudican a toda la gente, ¿no? Jóvenes, niños y a todo mundo, ¿no? Algunas palabras para... Ah, sí, claro, Edgar.
Nada más quiero, sé que gente va a hablar o va a decir, bueno, ¿dónde nos informamos? Nos pueden encontrar a través del Facebook Señorita Oaxaca, Señorita Oaxaca USA, ahí a través del Facebook, o a los teléfonos 323-770-1799. Y vuelvo a repetir, al teléfono 323-770-1799. Ahí pueden encontrar información acerca del evento y el certamen Señorita Oaxaca 2016. Gracias.
¿Algunas palabras, Deina, de despedida y saludos para la comunidad, para tu comunidad?
¿Quieren que hable zapoteco?
Oh, por favor, claro que sí.
Bueno, en Solaga decimos padiosh cuando saludamos, y como quiero incluir a los ochinenses, lo voy a hacer padiosh beneguarash, que incluye no solo a los solagueños, pero significa paisanos también. Y también mi hermanita cumple 10 años hoy y le quiero mandar saludos, se llama Sheina.
Oh, mira. Brenda, algunas palabras que tengas por ahí para nuestras comunidades, para la gente de tu pueblo, Xochina.
Sí, muchas gracias a todos por escuchar y ojalá puedan dar una donación a esta estación, ya que es la única estación aquí en los Estados Unidos que da este espacio para la comunidad, ¿no? En particular a esta hora para la comunidad oaxaqueña, y los invitamos otra vez para escuchar dentro de 2 semanas. Gracias.
Oh, no, pues gracias a ustedes que nos están acompañando y pues nos van a seguir acompañando en los próximos programas para dar información, porque me imagino que los jóvenes han de estar interesados, ¿no? Y aquí lo que se necesita es darles, abrir esas oportunidades, guiarlos y, por supuesto, ¿no?, llevarles la información. Como les decía, no nada más también en el aspecto económico a través de las becas, sino también en el aspecto cultural, político, social, ¿no? Que, pues bueno, los oaxaqueños estamos envueltos en todo esto. Edgar, algunas palabras para, señora Cándida, perdón, unas palabras para nuestros radioescuchas y para la gente de su comunidad.
Claro que sí, ojalá que mi comunidad también escuche esta radio libre, en donde podemos expresarnos sin estar preocupados por qué cantidad nos va a costar el comercial, valga la redundancia. Entonces, es importante que donemos, que apoyemos estos espacios libres. Comuníquense, por favor, al 818-985-5735 y manden su donativo, por favor. Los estamos ahora sí que invitando cordialmente a que tengamos un espacio para nosotros. Colaboren y no se arrepentirán.
Y les enviamos un saludo a todas las participantes y pues mucha suerte, échenle ganas, pues ya van a ser las representantes de este evento en futuras actividades, ¿no?, que va a desarrollar la comunidad oaxaqueña a través de la Asociación de Negocios Oaxaqueños. Edgar, ¿algunas palabras por ahí para los paisanos y no paisanos?
Pues sí, aquí invitándolos nuevamente a que apoyen a estas causas, a esta voz que hoy tenemos, esta voz libre de toda la comunidad, y seguir impulsando estos espacios para que nuestra comunidad se exprese abiertamente. Pueden apoyarnos a los teléfonos 818-985-5735. Vuelvo a repetir, 818-985-5735. Apoyen.
Bueno, pues les damos un saludo. Aquí les brindamos saludos. Les habló su amigo Roberto García en los controles, Lisette Tapia. Gracias también al compañero Jesús Cruz, conocido como Chuy. En las cámaras tenemos al compañero Toshli. Y bueno, no se retire, y a continuación viene Contragolpe.
Esto fue Senderos de Oaxaca.
Desde lo más profundo de nuestras raíces y nuestras prácticas tradicionales.
¿Sugerencias y comentarios?
Visite nuestra página de Facebook.
¿Deseas apoyar a los programas en español de KPFK? Pues ahora es el momento. Tenemos horarios disponibles de 9 a 12 de la noche. Mándame un correo electrónico con tu disponibilidad a José Benavides, jbenavides@kpfk.org. jbenavides@kpfk.org. Necesitaremos tu apoyo contestando las líneas telefónicas. Nos vemos aquí.
Los invitamos a escuchar su programa Caminando por Mesoamérica, un programa con entrevistas, análisis, crítica y autocrítica. Somos micrófonos abiertos a las voces de nuestras comunidades en la lucha por sus derechos y preservación de su soberanía. Escúchanos todos los lunes de 11:30 p.m. a 12 a.m. Caminando por Mesoamérica lo puedes escuchar solo aquí en tu radio KPFK, y acompaña a los pueblos mesoamericanos.
Está sintonizando Radio Pacífica KPFK 90.7 FM Los Ángeles, 98.7 FM Santa Bárbara. Estamos en recaudación de fondos. Su apoyo económico es muy importante. Llámenos al 818-985-5735 o pueden ver todos los obsequios que se ofrecen en la recaudación simplemente yendo a kpfk.org.
Queremos invitarles a escuchar el informativo Pacífica de lunes a jueves a las 10:30 de la noche. Noticias de Estados Unidos, América Latina y el mundo desde una perspectiva progresista. The informativo Pacífica invites you to tune into 90.7 FM Monday through Thursday to hear progressive news reports from the U.S., Latin America and around the world. De lunes a jueves a las 10:30 de la noche.
Invitamos a escuchar su programa Caminando por Mesoamérica, un programa con entrevistas, análisis, crítica y autocrítica. Somos micrófonos abiertos a las voces de nuestras comunidades en la lucha por sus derechos y preservación de su soberanía. Escúchanos todos los lunes de 11:30 p.m. a 12 a.m. Caminando por Mesoamérica lo puedes escuchar solo aquí en tu radio KPFK, y acompaña a los pueblos mesoamericanos.
¿Tienes un auto que ya no camina y solamente está estorbando? ¿Sale más barato el transporte público que llenarlo de gasolina? ¿Te quieres deshacer de él, pero no sabes cómo? Pues ahora puedes donar tu auto y apoyar a tu estación favorita. Y no importa la condición, Apóyanos donando tu carcacha vieja al 1-877-KPFK-AUTO, 1-877-573-5286. Y apoya a tu estación favorita. Nosotros nos encargaremos de todo.
And coming up next on Free Radio, it is Bathrob Spears Broadsides with special in-studio guest Rebecca Mills. Different interviews from different folks, and Nancy Eaton. We may be continuing further the discussion on the Coastal Commission's RV ban delayed, and who knows, perhaps your phone calls as well. So stay tuned.
I'm tired of moon songs, of star and of June songs. They simply make me nap. And ditties romantic drive me nearly frantic. I think they're all full of pap. History's making, nations are quaking. Why sing of stars above? For while we are waiting, Father Time's creating new things to be singing of. Sing me a song with social significance. All other tunes are taboo. I want a ditty with heat in it, appealing with feeling and meat in it. Sing me a song with social significance, or you can sing till you're blue. Let meaning shine from every line, or I won't love you. Sing me of wars and sing me of breadlines. Tell me of front page news. Sing me of strikes and last minute headlines. Dress your observation in syncopation. Sing me a song with social significance. There's nothing else that will do. It must get hot with what is what, or I won't love you. I want a song that's satirical, putting the mirror into miracle. It must be packed with social fact, or I won't love you. Sing me of kings and conferences martial. Tell me of mills and mines. Sing me of courts that aren't impartial. What's to be done with them? Tell me in rhythm. Sing me a song with social significance. There's nothing else that will do. It must be tense with common sense, or I won't love you.
And welcome to Bathrob Spears Broadsides, and welcome to you, Rebecca.
Hello.
Say something again. I want to make sure
we
got
me?
You. And one more time.
Hi, I'm here.
I think we got you. So, in case folks haven't been regularly listening to Free Radio, you and I did talk by phone when you were being held under duress. You remember that?
Yeah, I think we talked a couple times.
I think we did. And I think actually twice, and then once when you, maybe twice when you got back.
Yeah, I think once shortly after I was, like, within a month after I got out.
So you were facing some charges, and you were trying to defend yourself, and I don't know. Do you want to walk us through that grim
the
history?
The convoluted tale. I mean, I was charged with some things. I had a conflict with my neighbors. I was having some psychiatric and medical issues. They weren't particularly credible people, but, you know, the police, whatever, things happened. So I got hauled away to jail. I, you know, was having health issues that weren't properly addressed at the jail, but I was hanging in there. And I mean, I had been sent to the ER when I was evaluated at the jail because I had, you know, unusual things happening, but they sent me back, I think, mistakenly and appropriately. The jail didn't really follow up or do much to care about, you know, seeing that those issues were taken care of or resolved.
And we're talking about the Santa Cruz County.
Yeah, the, yeah, Santa Cruz County Jail, where they let people die from dehydration.
No, that's just Rebecca, poor Krista DeLuca. I mean, you lose a few along the way.
I know that seems to be the attitude, and it's your complaints aren't valid until we have objective evidence, like someone dying, that there's really a problem.
And that, of course, happened last year when DeLuca was caught pneumonia because she was choking on her own vomit. They refused to call the take her to the hospital. In fact, one homeless provider and methadone clinic guy had said if she had had methadone because she was coming off of heroin, it wouldn't have happened. That was back in 2015. And there have been, of course, at least four other deaths under the private medical services that you were lucky enough to have while you were in the Santa Cruz County Jail. But, you know, I got to ask you specifically, and you don't have to answer any of this, by the way, what were you charged with and what were the medical problems you had?
I was charged with initially, I think there were four counts. One of them got thrown out pretty quickly. Burglary, criminal threats, resisting arrest, and I think brandishing a weapon or something.
So you attacked your neighbor with a samurai sword
No.
and attempted to steal her television set. Is that right?
No. So burglary, people get thrown off by that charge because there was never any allegation that I was trying to steal anything. It includes entering your residence with the intent to commit a felony, which was the allegation, which they didn't clearly state what felony I supposedly had an intent to commit, but I was charged with that anyway. Yeah, so that was the allegation, was that I had entered by reaching my hand through the window, supposedly. That was the only entry that was alleged to have been made. And that I intended to commit a felony while I was doing that.
And what was, in sort of more simple English, stripping away all the legalese, what actually happened? If somebody were watching, what would they have said went down?
Well, so getting back to the medical issues that I was having,
let me ask you, first of all, have you resolved all these issues? Legally speaking, I don't want you to have to make admissions that are going to be used against you.
Yeah, no, I mean, my case has been resolved, and, you know, I mean, it's been long enough that there's really not a lot of room to even do anything. You know,
there's
medically...
No way we can prosecute you further.
No, and I mean,
lock you up in a psych ward, perhaps? Have you declared incompetent for a third time?
No.
No, well,
no.
It was a third time, right? You were twice declared
incompetent? Twice, but I went to the state hospital three times because the judge in the hospital couldn't agree on anything for a little while.
Oh, shucks.
So, you know...
you get the thrill of... mediating between those two. This could be a new role for you, Rebecca.
Well, it took a few months, but by then I'd been in custody for
over
a year.
So someone looking at the in at this whole situation would have said, what happened?
Well, that's the thing is, one of the medical issues I had, one of the characteristics of it is amnesia, because it's basically your brain is shutting down. It can cause death. And, you know, this is something that I was held on as an initial diagnosis at the ER, and then they changed it. So, you know, this was a bone of contention between me and the jail as to whether that was ever an appropriate diagnosis or not, and, you know, how am I going to prove that or disprove
that? Do you remember what happened?
So I don't remember the entire set of events, so that's a problem.
What's the allegation made by the neighbors and the police?
So,
there's a difference.
You know, it was like they said that... I think out of the blue that I just, you know, reached in and to this, through their window and grabbed this lady and tried to pull her out. But then somehow she managed to punch me with me holding her hands and that her boyfriend in this little studio apartment standing at the door that was a few feet away didn't see anything that happened. And it just didn't really jibe. And the things that I remembered, and I just remembered kind of two things from that sequence of events, was him brandishing something like a stick or a bat or something at me standing on his front porch. And then, me running off and saying, I guess you'll have to take that out of my deposit. So I was like, what really happened?
So these were the landlord or landlady?
No. These were tenants that had been there like a year less than I had. And that had moved in.
But you yourself, were you also a tenant? In this
Place? So I was. It was just a set of little apartments, studio apartments.
You had previously had disputes with these folks? Or?
No, not really. Not really, not per se. I mean, we had, you know, they were sharing my internet. They were kind of chronically behind in paying their share. You know, I didn't make a big deal out of it.
Do you remember what prompted any of this?
Yeah, I mean, I was acting strange. They didn't like it. Previously, they had called a 5150, you know, had the sheriff come out, and they had said...
And how would you define strange? What were you doing that you or they might consider strange, if you wish to say?
Well, I was, you know, at the time that I was arrested, I was... You know, strewing things around the property. I mean, I was in the process of getting rid of things, and I was also kind of going through some mental things related to, like, my grandfather had recently died, and I don't know, I was kind of, everything that I owned kind of symbolized something to me, so the way I arranged it had, like, important, you know, and I was kind of just thinking about a lot of things and using, like, moving things around to kind of symbolize things to me, but, you know...
He didn't like this approach?
No, they didn't. They didn't really get the whole, you know, having things lying around outside thing.
They failed to catch the symbolism.
No, I mean, who would, right? But
oh, you would, perhaps.
Yeah, I would, but they weren't too happy about it, and so
police took you off to the psych ward or to jail?
No. So they showed up. I was like, oh, this is not happening again. You know, so because this was the second time they had called, you know, to try to get me hauled away, and the first time. It was total surprise, and I was taken off guard. And
were you taken on a 5150 previously?
Right, like a couple weeks before I got arrested.
For how long?
You know, it was kind of a blur. I obtained the records, and I don't recall exactly. Maybe I was out for less than 2 weeks.
So they held you on a 5250 as well.
Yeah, they must have got some. You know, they it's not that hard to extend it if there's a psychiatrist.
Did they forcibly medicate you?
No, see, I'd been through this whole stuff before, and I was like, you know, I mean, yes, they did as far as emergency, supposed emergency stuff, right?
What did they dope you up with?
Oh, they have their little standard formula, which I think is, it was probably the Haldol and Ativan and Benadryl.
In 2015, it was 2014, I guess.
Yeah.
It was Haldol? That's a pretty horrible drug.
It is, and they don't really care if... You have, you know, they don't really think too much about it. It's kind of a knee-jerk thing, and that's probably one of the things that led to me having this really bad, you know, situation later on.
And which ward were you on? Where were you taken?
For this previous right, because I wasn't taken anywhere but the hospital after that. So a Dominican ER, and then I think they sent me to
Dominican ER where you initially was Haldol'd up. Where you were
Yeah, I believe, I mean, I'd have to go back and look. I believe they gave me, you know, because, you know, they tied me down to the bed and, you know,
were
I was...
Were you flailing and attacking the people?
I wasn't attacking anyone. I mean, I get upset when I'm tied down to a bed and they didn't like that, you know.
They were just trying to calm you down, Rebecca.
Yeah, right. If you can't, like, be happy to be completely tied down, you know, arms and legs and, you know, think that that's okay, then you need some drugs.
So this was but the first time or the second time? Are we talking about this time when you were, that actually resulted in these criminal charges?
No, the first time. The second time, I don't think the hospital was going to give me any kind of, you know, antipsychotic, any kind of neuroleptic, because the possible diagnosis I had was a negative reaction to those and was potentially life-threatening.
And do you have a history of being incarcerated under this kind of shit or not?
No, I mean, I have two, besides this incident, I had two misdemeanors on my record. I'd been arrested three other times, like, to be, like, charged with a crime. You know, two of those resulted in, you know, misdemeanor, disturbing the peace.
Any psychiatric holds?
Yeah, plenty. A lot. For, like, the 2.5 years previous to this thing happening, nothing, you know. But then previous to that, you know, there was a bunch of stuff. It was kind of... just incidents and then like long periods in between and then something.
So I'm sorry to be sort of stuck in this earlier time period, but anyway, in 2014 you were taken to jail. How long were you first to the psych ward? But you weren't medicated, and then you were taken to jail? Or?
No, so, no. So when I was arrested, I was taken to the ER for medical reasons, because I had a fever and a high blood pressure, and they needed to evaluate me.
But you weren't held, you weren't strapped down or in any way restrained?
Oh, no, I was, because at that point I was a prisoner.
Okay, so you were handcuffed.
So I was handcuffed. I was handcuffed to...
But not hogtied and blindfolded.
Well, no, it escalated to that later on. Yeah, like, it just... I mean, I knew something was wrong with me. I wasn't sure what, you know. I mean, I had never heard of this diagnosis that I heard them talking about in the hallway, neuroleptic malignant syndrome, you know. And I was like, okay, well, you know. But I knew, I could tell that something wasn't right with my body. You know, I felt like if I fell asleep, I might stop breathing. You know, that was the kind of feeling I was having.
And how long did this medical intervention happen for?
So they kept me overnight.
And then what happened?
And then, I mean, a different doctor took my care and decided to discharge me with a different diagnosis.
And then you just went home?
Or? No. So I was under arrest. So they took me to jail. They called the same people who arrested me and had them bring me back to the jail. But I don't remember any of that because they had given me, you know, Ativan at the hospital to calm me down. So, which also, you know, it's like it's that, you know, it's a benzodiazepine. They have similar effects to alcohol, except for they don't give you a hangover, you know.
So you were charged with these four charges, three of which disappeared.
No, one of which disappeared right away.
Sorry, three of which were retained. And you then were held for how long in the county jail until your next move?
Well, I mean, so the court system, you know, whatever.
What was your bail, I should ask?
So, because I was confrontational with the officers, and I think because one of them was a really, really fresh trainee, my bail, he called on the way to the jail and had my bail increased. So it was set at $100,000.
And you, of course, wrote a check.
Well, the thing is, you know, I actually had funds in the bank that could have covered 10% of that. But, you know, you don't get that money back. And I was like, you know, I didn't know, I never bailed before. I didn't know if that was, I'd heard that 10% was kind of what you needed to bail out.
I think that's true.
Well, you know, it's up to the bondsman, what kind of security, what kind of payment plan, all that, you know. But, you know, I was like, you don't get that money back, and I'm in this unstable, like, physical situation. You know, my health is not stable, and I don't necessarily have a safe place to go, because where this happened is where these people are, you know, itching to call the police. And, you know, it's a mess right now, in addition. And, you know, I was like, where would I go? What would I do? How would I be safe?
So you sort of chose to stay in jail?
Kind of not. I mean, I really was miserable. I mean, if you want to get into the physical situation I was in, I couldn't sleep because, I mean, they had given me Haldol at the jail after I got there during the period that I don't remember at all, because I was covering the window with their food, I guess, and then when they took that away and I put me in another room or whatever.
You covered the window because you wanted privacy?
I assume. I don't remember. I later
I
got...
You were doing some finger painting of some kind.
I'm assuming that I felt like I didn't want them looking at me.
Right.
You know, and they didn't like that, and so this is all based on reports that I read later, because I really don't remember at all. And I'm pretty sure that's because they, you know, the hospital had given me, you know, drugs. So
how long were you held there?
In
jail.
In jail, in total from, I mean, I got transferred back and forth to the state mental hospital. So
wait, before your first transfer, how long were you?
Before my first transfer, which was like late November, so from July, August, September, October.
From July
like
to November?
5 months,
so
June to November.
During the latter months of 2015, you were...
2014.
2014.
So yeah, I know. It's been a while.
And during that time, what kind of legal help did you have?
So I had initially, you know, someone from the public defender's office that, you know, they don't do a whole lot at your first court. You know, it's an arraignment. They just do charges, not guilty, you know, okay, we'll see you later.
Well, you could demand a trial within 30 days if you're held in jail, you know.
Yeah, so you can not waive your time, and you can have, I think it's maybe, I don't know what's considered a speech. It might be 60 days.
It's 30 days, unless it's a felony.
It is. They were felonies.
They were felonies?
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, two of them were strikes.
So I'm dealing with a very dangerous criminal here.
Well, I ended up with one misdemeanor out of this whole experience, so.
Oh, this was overcharging in order to get you to plead?
Well, I think that's a general strategy, right? I mean, like I said, this burglary charge, what was it based on? I mean, what crime was I supposedly intending to commit when I, you know, crossed the threshold of their window?
So you were taken, and then you were sent to a state psychiatric agency. Had you been declared incompetent, and I should say, being declared incompetent, that doesn't mean you're being declared, you know, mentally unstable for a limited period of time or in need of care. It means that you are considered to be legally incompetent to engage in sort of normal business transactions such as a plea bargain, your own defense, and so forth.
It's specifically actually that you either don't understand certain specific things about the legal system, like the nature of your charges, blah, blah, how the court system works, you know, all that, or that you are unable to work with a defense attorney to help in your own defense.
So at what point did you first get declared incompetent?
I got declared incompetent on September 17th, 2014.
And why did that happen, Rebecca?
That happened because I was trying to get my public defender replaced.
The name of your public defender?
Who's no longer working there, Amy Buenteo. And she was the second one that I had. I got handed off after I wanted to continue the case beyond the preliminary hearing. She had told me she was going to meet with me, and she didn't show up and didn't, you know, time was passing. I was like, the time until my next court date, which is supposed to be, you know, for setting for trial, is elapsing, and we haven't gone over any of the evidence except for you dropped off the sheriff's reports, you know, but there's video recording, there's possible audio recording, there's this, there's that. I want to see what happened. I want to see what evidence they had, because I didn't remember a lot of what happened. And I was like, I know who I am. I remember some of what happened. I know what kind of people my neighbors are. You know, I want to know what the basis for these charges is.
So she would not agree to do this, so you...
She wouldn't even communicate with me. So I requested that she be replaced.
And the result, and you then went before Judge...
Volkman.
And Judge Volkman's kind approach was to have you declared incompetent.
Yeah, when I was in court and I was explaining the reasons why I felt like she, you know, should be replaced, he, I guess, felt I was incoherent. I don't know what, but he...
You remember that clearly?
Yeah, I remember being there. I remember, yeah.
Were you incoherent?
I think, you know, I tend to talk quickly. I tend to have a lot to say. I don't think I was incoherent. I think if
did
I...
You keep interrupting poor Judge
Volkman? I did not. I didn't know how this hearing would go. So I didn't have, like, a canned written statement. And, you know, I had some notes that I was speaking from. And
did Volkman schedule for a competence hearing, or did he simply declare you were incompetent?
No, they have to follow the law. Well, supposedly, but he didn't completely... So they have to have, like, a professional evaluate you and submit a report. If you want to contest it, they're supposed to have two professionals. They didn't do that. I clearly stated that I wanted to contest it.
Did you contest it?
I was given very little opportunity to do so. How was I going to do that?
You could have said, I contest this.
I wasn't even told accurately when the court date was, where the competency decision was going to be made.
And so you were held in jail and essentially not allowed to contest?
Well, I mean, I didn't know what would have happened at the hearing, because I started having, like, severe pain related to back pain, related to, I have like a history of degenerative disc disease. I've had surgery because I had severe sciatica where I couldn't walk, and I was having like that kind of pain, but like not sciatic, but some other nerves in my legs that started happening after I went to court for the hearing to replace my attorney. So, and it, you know, it got aggravated by activity and all this stuff. So, I was told that this hearing that was happening was supposed to be related to, I think, setting the trial date. Or it wasn't related to when it was originally scheduled. So
it wasn't made clear to you that it was a competency hearing.
No, the date got actually changed. The competency hearing was supposed to be on the 19th.
You were declared incompetent, and
I wasn't there.
in your absence, you were declared incompetent. It was a mercy, so you wouldn't be upset about it. And then you were sent off to a state hospital.
Well, it doesn't happen immediately. So I was waiting, you know. Well, they have to have another hearing to listen to all the recommendations and then make their decision as to where you go.
And so you were sent to, after all this?
So he ordered me sent to Patton State Hospital, which is in San Bernardino County, down south. And it took about 7 weeks for that to actually happen.
And how long were you there?
And I was there 13 days.
Were you forcibly medicated?
No. So they had neglected to put in an order for that.
Did you fare better by not being forcibly medicated?
I think so. I mean, you know, I wasn't there long enough to really make a difference anyway.
Did you smear your food on the windows?
They don't lock people up there unless you're, like, they have one, like, seclusion room that they use on a very limited basis. They don't, otherwise no one's locked up.
So after ICSO, it was a fairly open situation.
Yeah, it's totally different. And the people at the jail, like, they, I mean, most of them can't get their head around that you can take people directly from a jail situation where they may be somewhat of a discipline problem to a psych hospital where there's completely different rules and things are kind of okay.
So they were okay for 14 days or 13 days, and then you were sent back to jail?
Well, I mean, the order for me to go back was, like, they wrote that up right away. And then the county has a certain amount of time to take you back, 10 days from when they receive it. Otherwise, they start have to pick up the tab for you being down
what
there.
What happened after you returned to jail?
So then they have a hearing.
Santa Cruz County Jail.
Yeah, so they, you know, they have to have a hearing to actually, accept the recommendation and restart your case, officially restore you to competency. And then your case starts to, you know, proceed again.
So you were restored to competency?
Yeah, with like a week or two after that.
And then you were held in jail again for how long?
So, I mean, I didn't get released until, you know, a year later.
But you were held in jail until there was a second competency hearing?
No. So once you're restored to competency, you're, so then things happen. I mean, I was trying to get a different attorney, but my money had been stolen. And I was like, there's no way that anything's going to work with this lady that I have. I was continuing to request that the judge replace her, but he was
just... the same public defender?
Yes, same public defender, same judge.
Was she perhaps more amenable to meeting with you this time?
Not really, no.
So...
I mean, the entire time I had her, she never did review the evidence with me that she had said at our first meeting at the jail that she would.
So, you know, I'm going to skip ahead now because I'm realizing that for those who wish, and I would have to look up the broadcast in which you spoke about this at length.
Yeah,
you went through it, and I forced you to do this whole thing. What happened?
I've done this a couple times, I guess.
Yeah,
it's
so
kind
I mean,
of
we
convoluted.
But let's move. It's not convoluted. It's detailed. It's elaborate. It's your experience. But we did talk about it before.
Yeah.
So I'm going to let that speak for itself. And if people are interested in more details of your adventures in jail, and you talked about your relations with the other prisoners, your criticisms of the jail, the positive things you had to say about it, and so forth. And, you know, that can all be found on this audio. If anyone's interested, give a call to 423-HUFF, 423-4833. That's the line that's my line. It's also a line for Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom. I'm going to mention that this is Free Radio Santa Cruz. We do have a call-in number, 427-3772. We are talking to Rebecca Mills, who is now at liberty in Santa Cruz. Watch out. She may come and get you.
Oh, yeah.
She doesn't seem as dangerous. That would require years in jail and in psychiatric wards. But
that one misdemeanor vandalism count, that really, yeah, I really needed all that time to work that out.
Have you been charged with anything since?
No.
You kept a clean nose, so to speak?
Yeah, which, I mean, is not unusual, like, for me. I mean, I don't really have a history of, like, committing crimes back-to-back or whatever.
Well, we'll keep an eye on you in the studio while we play this little bit of Ryan Harvey's Tea Party. And, again, if you want to call in, 427-3772 is the call-in number. At 7, we're going to get a call from Mike Boyd. I think Mike is a medical marijuana litigant who wants to end the taxing of medical marijuana. He wants to roll back the taxes that the city and county passed, I guess it was 2 years ago. And he's talked about this on the air before, and he's going to talk about it again, perhaps. So tune in for that, and don't go away. You got other stuff. If you have your own reports from the city and from the street, I'm interested in those as well. So don't go away.
Tea party on the Capitol lawn, asking you which side you're on, drawing battle lines in this country. We're a rich nation full of boarded homes, crowded prisons, abandoned schools, poor folks with hard goals, rich folks with poor souls, undereducated.
And that was a snatch of a Tea Party from Ryan Harvey. You're tuned to Free Radio, 101.3 FM, freakradio.org. I've learned in the last few days that, much as I hate to report it, our transmitter site is going to be eliminated in about a month and a half. We've learned that the area that is loudest, home that is loudest, put up an antenna and a transmitter, in violation of FCC regulations, I might add, but nonetheless, as a benefit to the community and an opportunity to actually spread the word and hear the kind of stuff you're hearing now on Free Radio, we are going to be out as far as having any kind of live broadcast capability, unless we can find someone who, this could be you or someone you know, who wants to allow us to put up an antenna and locate a transmitter there, which isn't involved essentially a very small shack, and it doesn't involve a lot of risk. No landlord has ever been prosecuted for doing this, though they will threaten you if they get around to it, they being federal authorities on occasion. But no one has actually ever suffered any financial penalties in the 20-year history of Free Radio. So give a call to 423-4833 if you have any ideas, if you have any thoughts, if you have any offers, because otherwise you will still be able to hear us on the stream. But the danger with that is that, frankly, broadcasters who come to the studio aren't that interested in broadcasting by stream. People can make their own iPod broadcasts at home, and it's just not the same thing. So we will probably shrink, if not disintegrate, as a radio station without transmitter capability. So 423-4833 if you have any ideas on this. And I hope you do, because we need those ideas. We'll be hearing some more from Ryan Harvey in a bit. I've got in the studio with me Rebecca Mills. And Rebecca, you make sure your mic is up.
Yeah. So, hello.
Hello. You are currently, what are you doing? What's your useful social function these days? Justify yourself, please.
Oh, I've got a couple part-time jobs, and I'm active with an activist group called Sin Baras, which is a prison abolitionist group here in Santa Cruz. We're currently doing some things related to the medical care at the jail, trying to just get people to care and get people that care to let the sheriff and the board of supervisors and the people that are involved in providing the care know that there are people out there that are keeping an eye on things, that want things to be better.
Did Sin Baris make any contact with you while you were in jail?
Yeah, actually, kind of after I'd been in custody almost a year, I had a friend of mine just search and see if there was anyone that was working on any issues related to, you know, the local jail. Found them and put me in touch with someone that was active with Sin Baris then.
What did they do to help out, if anything?
As far as practical help or things that actually, you know, made an immediate difference to my situation, not a whole lot. But, as far as moral support, I think that was important. As far as just having someone to listen to me and hear me and understand and validate that my experiences were valid, because I was, you know, being surrounded by negative messages and untrue things being said about me, and it was difficult.
How much contact, if any, have you had with other psychiatric survivors and anti-psychiatry groups, or groups that are, with groups that are concerned about fighting compulsory medication, compulsory incarceration? If I should ask, do any of those issues interest you?
Yeah, if there were an active group locally that I, you know, could participate in, I'd be interested. I haven't found that to be the case here. I mean, maybe I just haven't stumbled upon the right people. I think a lot of the practices in psychiatry are really disturbing, are, you know, really harmful. And you know, there's no reason that things need to be that way.
Well, yeah, and I'm, of course, particularly concerned with the specific practices of the psychiatric authorities here in Santa Cruz, and whether, for example, the psychiatric advocate, who you're supposed to be able to have a Reese hearing before you are forcibly medicated here. That's what's a hearing that determines if that's the least invasive medication that you are offered. You know, they're the most necessary medication. And that's always been an interest of mine. Of course, it's different, I imagine, if you're being held in the jail on criminal charges, but I'm wondering how much different.
It's a lot different, and I think that there are people that, well-intentioned, and I mean, I feel like do-gooders are always the most dangerous in some ways, but that feel like, you know, that should change, because currently, you know, if you're held in a psychiatric facility, there's, you know, the bar to getting an order to involuntarily medicate you, in my experience, is very low. I mean, there's supposed, you know, protection legally. There's supposedly, you know, hearings that happen that kind of make it legal. But, you know.
Did you experience this yourself?
Not here in Santa Cruz, in other places.
But you did experience it elsewhere.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, in Los Angeles mostly.
So you not only went to San Bernardino, but you went to another psych ward later, right?
No. This was long before I came to Santa Cruz.
Another time. Okay, so, and again, I guess I am trying to focus on Santa Cruz. What about the situation in the Santa Cruz County Jail? Do you have any way of avoiding psychiatric medication?
Yeah, so it's they don't. I mean, I think it, as a matter of practice, they don't force medication on people, any kind of medication, you know.
Did you request medication at the jail?
Did I request psychiatric medication?
Yes.
Or any?
It sounds like you got psychiatrically medicated at the jail.
Not forcibly. Not until, yeah, no, they don't. They're not really on the ball with force. I think that there were a couple of individual instances where they did single people out and get court orders to medicate them.
You were never forcibly medicated at the county jail.
Except for this so-called, not as like a routine medication that I was required to take daily. I was medicated as a so-called emergency medication, which, you know, like I had said, like initially when I came into the jail and I was, you know, covering my window, they...
But of the many... I'm sorry, of the many... days you were there, and your total time in jail again amounted to many months, right?
Yeah, like almost 18 months.
Did at any time did they either offer or pressure you or require you to take any kind of psychiatric medication other than this original so-called emergency medication?
Well, I had probably at least 8 times where I was ordered to take emergency medication.
And that was because you were suddenly once more finger painting on the...
You know, for such a wide variety of supposed reasons. I mean, they freak... Anything involving poop, they basically freak out about, and that's automatically, we're going to drug you if you do anything.
So you've been
poop.
You were doing fecal sculptures of some kind in the jail?
Unless you've been there, I don't think you're aware of... They have these rooms that they call... what do they call them? Safety cells. And, like, what is that? It sounds a little ominous, right? And so these are these rubber rooms. They're coated in, like, a layer of some kind of, you know, resilient material. No furniture, nothing. A little grate in the floor that is, you know, where you're supposed to put any waste material, but don't put anything that will make it not flush. It's and then they have a little button they can press to make water swirl around. You know, a little window, and that's it. And so, and
how long were you held in these rooms?
You know, usually maybe up to a couple days.
And under what circumstances were you invited into these places?
Under circumstances they're not supposed to. Oftentimes, they're not legally supposed to put people in there unless they're a threat to themselves, a threat to others, like physically, or destroying jail property, and you can't stop them.
And so, when were you put into this room?
Oh, a number of times. Just to pull me out of, like, if I was being disruptive sometime.
Oh, and that would mean, like, what?
Like, I was pounding on, like, the door, or, you know, making a lot of noise, or whatever.
And why would you do that? Make a lot of noise?
Because things were happening that were not cool, and no one was doing anything about
Such
it.
Such as?
Oh, goodness. Other people pounding on my door. you know, people throwing water under my door. People, all kinds of things, you know. One point, they turned off my water. I wasn't getting any water for the course of several days. They weren't even flushing my toilet. I was like, this is not cool. I got pretty worked up about that.
So you tried to draw their attention to these issues.
And not in the most productive way, but, I mean, that did happen.
Fair enough. So we're talking with Rebecca Mills. I'm going to take a sort of a side trip here because one of the issues that you asked about, where the anti-psychiatry or let us say alternate psychiatry groups in Santa Cruz, one of them used to be PERC, which was Patients Inmates Rights Collective. And they're no longer around. I think they died of old age or dissolved or... morphed into MHCAN, which you're probably familiar with.
Mm-hmm.
And MHCAN has been a subject of some discussion on this show, partially because we've gotten complaints from a woman named Nancy. I've gotten complaints from a woman named Nancy Eaton and a few other folks that MHCAN has cracked down on its clients out of fear that the police, the neighbors, and some real estate speculator on the corner and some businesses nearby are trying to shut down MHCAN. That they want to remove them from the area so they can take over the property, and that they are blaming MHCAN's clients for being a public nuisance, increasing the crime in the area, bothering the, you know, frightening the horses, all that sort of thing. And I'm all for supporting MHCAN. I'm not all for repression against its clients as a way of pandering to neighborhood fears and prejudices. So I, and of course, I'm not trying to hold the organization together there and fighting to maintain grants and doing all the kinds of things that, you know, might justify, and I guess a lot of people feel, or some people feel, do justify putting tighter restraints and requirements on MHCAN clients, such as you can't park within 2 blocks, you can't sit across the street at the bus stop. At least these are the concerns that have been mentioned. And we're going to hear now from Nancy Eaton, who I interviewed about a week or two ago. And we've actually talked with her before. This is sort of an update. I spoke with Sarah Leonard, who's the executive director of MHCAN, sweet person, trying to hold a lot of stuff together, got a lot of sympathy for her. I also have to view her, however, as the responsible party who makes the decisions, particularly when you talk to the chair of the board of directors, Steve Plaich. He will tell you, oh, don't talk to me, talk to Sarah Leonard. We can't do anything about whatever happens there. We have no power. And I said, wait a minute, you're the board of directors. Of course you have power. And he says, well, yes, but we won't exercise it because we leave it up to her. So she bears the responsibility for the concerns that some of these ex-clients, and particularly one, Nancy Eaton, we're about to hear from, has. So we're going to hear this now. And, I mean, I've heard from, it's hard to say if the situation has changed in the last couple of months, but Steve Plaich, as I said, the director, the chair of the board of directors, and also a city council candidate, which doesn't give him any more prestige, gives him less, in my opinion. But nonetheless, one would think he's probably more accessible than most in some respects. Let's hear what Nancy has to say.
Hello, I'm on the phone with Nancy Eaton. Today is Thursday, the 11th of August, 2016. Hi, Nancy.
Hi.
Okay, well, I'm on the phone with Nancy Eaton. Today is Thursday, the 11th of August, 2016. Hi, Nancy.
Hi.
And I know you're calling in with a report about a guy essentially who was assaulted. Is that accurate?
Yes. A 75-year-old man that was assaulted by, he thinks it was Take Back Santa Cruz. But he's been homeless for a while himself. He's 75 years old, and he was watching somebody's vehicle, you know, for him that was in the hospital. But he wants to remain anonymous for some reason. I guess he just doesn't want people to know who he is.
Yeah,
but anyway.
That's okay.
Okay.
And I should say that this interview with Nancy had a dual purpose. One was to get this report from her, and another, you'll hear it, also talk about the MHCAN update.
Well, anyway, he went to pick up the vehicle. It had, like, you know, a cracked window or whatever, and I guess the neighbors didn't like it being parked there. But you have a three-day thing, you know. He was within the 3 days. Well, anyway, he went to get the vehicle, and the person wouldn't let him get the vehicle, and he was pushing him around, and I don't know the whole thing. All I know is he got assaulted by, he thinks it's Take Back Santa Cruz.
Now,
is this homeowner or whatever.
Okay. Is this the guy who was in the hospital or the guy who was watching the vehicle?
He was watching the vehicle for somebody that was in the hospital.
Okay, so he went to get the vehicle for the guy who was in the hospital.
Yeah, he wants to move it around because you got like the three-day thing.
Gotcha.
You know, by law, you have what?
Yeah, no, I understand. So, where was this?
Up near Morrissey area, up around that area. I don't know exactly where, but somewhere, you told me, around Morrissey.
And when did it happen?
It's been a couple weeks now. It was on a Friday. But he ended up going to the hospital with heart problems, you know, because he's, you know, elderly man. And so I think he's going to go to court, and he wants to do a lawsuit on the guy because he ended up in the hospital twice over it, going back and forth to the hospital.
Does he have any more details about the conversation that happened between them or the specifics of this incident?
All I know is the guy didn't want him to pick up the vehicle. He called the cops. The guy that the homeowner called the cops, you know,
so the homeowner didn't want the vehicle gone. That's kind of strange, isn't it?
Well, he wanted it gone. He wanted it to be towed away. He didn't want it. Didn't want him to drive it off. Which is, you know, I mean, that's, you know, messing with other people's.
Yeah, no, it is. It is. Does this mean he actually physically interfered with the guy trying to drive away the vehicle?
Uh-huh, physically.
And what was the nature of the physical interference?
I don't know. All I know is he ended up in the hospital over it. I know he was pushing him, but he's 75 years old. I don't know if he ended up falling or not. I didn't ask him if he fell on the ground or not. But
he was
pushing him around.
Did he give a description of the guy who did this?
The only thing he told me is he thought it was Take Back Santa Cruz or a homeowner in the area, and it wasn't even in front of the guy's house. He used to want it out of the area, but he didn't want him to pick it up and take it out of the area. He wanted it towed away, which is kind of mean, you know, I think.
It's actually, you know, it is a way of punishing people who are living in their vehicles or parking vehicles nearby that you don't like, so.
Yeah, well, I had a cracked window, I guess. The hood, you know, like, he went to the, what do you call it, the Catholic, St. Vincent de Paul, got $100 to get, take care of, they were going to help get another window for him, you know, and help him out, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So when this guy gets out of the hospital, which is another senior, he's 80, the other senior, but that the window would be fixed, you know? And, so he was going to go to a different church and get a little more because front windows are very expensive. So I don't know how bad crack it was because I didn't really see it myself. But.
So did the first guy who was in the hospital who owned the vehicle, has he been able to retrieve the vehicle?
No, because he was still in the hospital. I'm not too sure how he's doing.
So both of these guys are actually in the hospital now, right?
Well,
and I thought we had a full interview. Apparently not. Which brings us back to you, Rebecca. Now, one of the reasons that we spent about 40 minutes going over the old ground, and I kind of apologize both to you and listeners, and even to myself for doing that. But you've got some concerns about damages you've suffered, or concerns you have about wrongs that have happened that you want to see redressed by the district attorney.
Currently, I had a situation early on when I was initially being found incompetent to stand trial after I tried to get my public defender replaced and that had been denied, and I was facing, you know, potentially being sent to a state hospital and all this. Someone came into the jail, referred by someone I had met in jail, and you know, he's like, I'm an attorney, I want to help you, let's talk about your case, blah, blah, blah. Came in, came back, we met several times. He turned out that his law license was suspended at the time. I was asking for help with all kinds of different things. He's like, I'm here to help you, you know, I care about you, you know, I'm really care about, you know, anyway. So, one of the things he did was get a power of attorney on my bank account, which I had not had any access to or any way of knowing if, like, my money had even been stolen, maybe. It was still there. He pulled some money out, and then he came up with a bill for legal services that I had never agreed to have him provide legal services, and was like, I'm taking all your money.
And did he take all your money?
Yes.
How much was that?
Just over $11,000. I mean, not every single cent that I had, but yeah.
That's and how many hours of so-called service did he claim he was providing?
He was billing at $300, close to $300 an hour, so you do the math, you know.
How many hours did he actually spend either with you or doing research?
Who knows? I mean, I think probably what he reported was maybe relatively accurate as far as time that he spent. The thing is, none of that was time that I had agreed to pay him for anything.
Did you sign any contracts?
No, he kept bringing in contracts. He was bringing in contracts, you know, for most of the time we were meeting, and I never signed any of them.
You were in jail when this was happening.
Yeah, I kept, or he would, you know, submit them to me. I, you know, he kept updating them based on things we discussed. So I was like, okay, well, we're discussing having him represent me. And, you know, if I agree, then these might be the terms of the contract, unless I want him to change something. And so during all that time, you know, later on, he's writing a bill that includes all that as billable time.
Name of the attorney?
David Eric Thompson.
Still in Santa Cruz?
I'm not sure. His state bar says that he's practicing out of San Francisco. That's what their website says, but I don't know what the truth is of the matter.
David Thompson, if you wish to call in and defend yourself, now's your chance. 427-3772. How long did this relationship with you and Thompson go on?
As far as me actually seeing him, it was about 2 weeks, and then the fallout after he, you know, dropped this bomb, oh, here's a bill. I have your money and I'm not giving it back. In fact, I'm going to go take some more out to add up to this total that I have.
Well, you must have signed something that gave him power to access those accounts.
Right. So, like I said, I wanted to have access to my bank account as a completely separate matter from whether or not he was ever going to provide me legal services.
So you gave him access to the bank account?
Yes. And
did he ever transfer any money to you?
No. That was my intent, was that, you know, I would be able to have money spent however I needed it to be spent.
How long ago did this happen?
Almost 2 years.
And did you complain to the local district attorney, Bob Lee, and then whoever's doing it now, I guess Jeff Roselle?
I don't think I had any access directly to the district attorney at the time. I attempted to file a report with the sheriff.
And have you gotten any... are you talking about Sheriff Hart when, or before Sheriff?
With, a patrol deputy.
I see. And so now you brought a sheaf of papers with you. You're attempting to do the same thing. I guess I wish you luck in what you're doing, assuming the accuracy of your claims.
You know. Yeah, I mean, I have paperwork to back all this up. It's just sad that, you know, in general, it seems like the sheriff's office kind of facilitates criminal activity against prisoners at the jail.
Do you have any other examples of this other than your own case?
No, I'm not talking about specifically. Like, I mean, they create conditions where people are going to get beat up, where, where violence is bound to happen, where, I mean, and most people who are in custody are facing the loss of their property in some way if they're in custody for any length of time, and they don't have access to... So if someone steals your stuff while you're in jail, good luck, you know, because that is a crime. But to convince someone that it's happened and to get anything to happen, you know, it's the odds of that are so low.
Well, yeah, but, you know, here we have this front page article from today, actually. I'm the Santa Cruz Urinal, or the Sentinel, as they call themselves. New tactics aim for transparency and trust. 21st Century Policing Initiative consists of 79 recommendations.
Yeah, very little of that had anything to do with people in custody.
And, well, of course, you know, the sheriff runs the jail.
I know that he knows that, yes. It is, in fact, one of their...
You're not suggesting that his jail-running activity is, shall we say, lacking in some way?
I think that's been, you know, confirmed. And as far as transparency, I don't think they're eager to have transparency with the operations of their custody program.
Well, I know that I have recently requested Sheriff Hart's stats on the number of marijuana raids he apparently, some claim, illegally made last year throughout the county. And he did send me an email saying his staff was working on it. So... we can always keep our fingers crossed, and if I were a woman, I'd keep my legs crossed as well with respect to this whole situation, if you'll forgive me for putting it that way. I actually may actually be able to play a little more of this interview, but... is there any? Are you? Have you found another attorney? Are you looking for another attorney? Have you realized that attorneys will soak you dry and then walk away high and dry?
I mean, when I first got out of custody, I thought that maybe, you know, certain aspects of my medical care were not cool, but, you know, stuff like that. I was like, well, I felt like it wasn't in my best interest to pursue it. It would take money and time and to what benefit. I don't know. You know, as far as I'm trying to pursue, I had filed a couple, actually three writs of habeas corpus while I was in custody.
That's an attempt to say, take me before a judge and tell me why you're holding me.
It can also be related to conditions of your confinement. It's been originally it was only for that, but now it can also relate to conditions of confinement. One of which I filed in San Bernardino County and two of which I filed in Santa Cruz County. They were rejected out of hand in Santa Cruz with it was like, because an attorney's not involved, this claim is not valid. And I was like, that is the most ridiculous claim I've ever heard. Part of the purpose of a writ of habeas corpus is to allow someone who's being held illegally and is not properly represented to have access to the courts. So, even though all the issues that are surrounding that have been resolved, I believe there is a provision that if it's an important constitutional issue, that it can be decided to set some precedent as to, you know, how things are supposed to be done. So I think I can still pursue that. That's something I'm interested in doing.
And you will keep us advised of the progress of this desperate, and I would fear futile struggle, but I don't know. I mean, I haven't, you know, I have very little confidence in these courts. But if you can muster public opinion on your side, that's also possible. Although, you know, you're just a crazy bird who got locked up and shipped out, and now you're back with sour grapes. You know, I'm sure.
No, I mean, there's important legal issues as far as that the proper procedure wasn't followed to find me incompetent to stand trial, as far as I was not given any opportunity in court. You know, there's important legal issues there.
That was my understanding, too, when I've talked to you over the years on this. You're tuned to Free Radio, 101.3 FM. I believe Michael Boyd, who is, as I mentioned before, a marijuana advocate who's trying to return your pennies to your pocket if you're a marijuana user, particularly a medical marijuana user. I guess that's primary interest. And Michael, feel free to call in if you're listening to this. And while we're waiting, I think I actually have got this interview rolling again, the one that I mentioned before with Nancy Eaton. And she was, of course, referring to a situation that she had reported to her about a 75-year-old man being assaulted. And what interested me was, of course, it had to do with an apparent anti-homeless hate crime against a person parking an RV in the neighborhood where privileged and violent people, at least in this case, if her account is accurate, seem to want to take matters into their own hands. And they're being supported by city council and county board of supervisors' bans against RVs, which I'll talk about in a bit. But I think we have a phone call. So let's see. Hi, you're on Free Radio.
Hello, Robert. This is Mike Boyd calling in.
Hey, Mike. I've mentioned that. Have you been able listening to our previous jabber here?
No.
No problem.
I was.
So Mike, you are looking for someone to press for another ballot initiative. What's the latest?
So the latest is this. There are three measures on the ballot in the November election affecting the tax on medical marijuana, so the so-called cannabis business tax. And I already have filed arguments for the city of Santa Cruz, and their tax is their amending their business tax, cannabis business tax that I sued them over in the federal court, and now I'm back in the state court. And then that's called Measure I. And then in the county, they're also doing the same amendment, which is Measure E. And essentially what they're doing is the word cannabis business is not defined in the earlier measure, which is a non-existent word in Proposition 215, the Compassionate Use Act of 1996. So I've got the arguments already filed for those two measures. But there's a new one, which they're not amending, but doing a new one in Watsonville. Okay, and that's measure L.
Mike, slow down for just a minute here, because I'm not sure I understand what it is you're actually trying to do. What's the significance of this marijuana business language, and what exactly are you trying to do here with this, with your opposition or whatever it is you're doing with respect to this election situation?
So what I'm trying to do is file an argument against the resolutions that the city, county, and the city of Santa Cruz, city, county of Santa Cruz, and the city of Watsonville have filed. There are three measures on the ballot in the election.
What are those resolutions in summary?
Well, the city and the county one are to amend it to clarify the word business tax, cannabis business.
And clarify it in what way?
Well, to define it, because they didn't define it in the earlier resolution. That's what I sued them over. There's no such thing.
So they're trying to define it, but then aren't they trying to do what you want them to?
Well, yes and no. Well, no, they're not doing what I want them to do. I want them to stop violating my rights as a patient. So I don't think they should be even having the vote.
And I guess your point is, has always been that medicine is not taxable, but suddenly marijuana is being taxed.
Yeah, because that, and that violates Proposition 215, the Compassionate Use Act of 1996 that was passed by 55% of the statewide vote. Okay.
And so what you're looking for is someone to represent the arguments in Watsonville, as I understand you wanted to come on and make a pitch for that?
I've already prepared the argument. I need someone to, there's a signature statement, it's called, and basically they have to be a registered voter in the city of Watsonville. And then I would show them the statement that I would be filing, and they would be authorizing me to file it under my name, essentially. And I've already done that in the city of Santa Cruz and the county of Santa Cruz.
So, in other words, what you're really looking for is someone who is a resident of Watsonville who agrees with you that medical marijuana should not be taxed.
Correct.
And I guess, you know, if you want to look at all the technicalities, agrees with the specifics of your argument. How can people reach you if they want to be helpful? I got to warn you, I don't know if anybody in Watsonville is listening, but if they are, you know, who knows? How can you be reached?
Or maybe they know a friend. Someone of your listener may know a friend in Watsonville who supports the cause, who would be willing to contact them. Essentially, the best way to get a hold of me is through my cell phone, which is area code 408-891-9677. The best thing to do is to text me. Send me a text at that cell phone number, and send me your email address, and I'll send you the form and the argument that I'm trying to file that I need to get signed. You don't have to be there. All you have to do is I need a wet copy signature from you somehow. And the deadline is tomorrow by 5 p.m.
Oh, boy. Well, let's see what happens then.
Well, I was able to get one for the city, no problem. Of the city of Santa Cruz, that is.
I understand. The number again to reach Mike is 408-891-9677. Do I have that right?
That is correct.
And so give him a call at 408-891-9677 if you want to help put this, to clarify the ballot argument against this clarification of measure E and I, which we can talk about perhaps, Michael, on another show in more detail, and also, you know, the statewide recreational marijuana initiative, which I think you've also spoken out against, not as a person who opposes marijuana, but as a person who opposes corporate control of marijuana.
Yes, and in my statement, I'm actually speaking out against the statewide measure, which basically the problem with the statewide measures is that they have taxing on it, and they're basically commercializing the medical use of marijuana in violation again of the Compassionate Use Act of 1996. So essentially, what's going on is there's a lot of people out there that are greedy and don't want compassion in the equation anymore. They want to get rid of that and replace it with a commercial interest, and unfortunately, recent law is that that's not protected. The only thing that's protected is the medical use, as far as I can tell, under federal law, just so you know.
I remember, yeah, there was a recent court decision there, rather important court decision a couple days ago. If
I'm Ninth that, Circuit ruled the Department of Justice could not prosecute people that were complying with the state law for medical marijuana.
Which should stop the prosecution of Oakland's large, perhaps somewhat corporate, Harborside medical marijuana group. I don't know.
Sure. But, you know, that's a different issue.
I don't really want to get into it now, Mike, if I can.
Yeah, that's fine.
But I do want to get into it another time if you're going to be available, and I hope you will be.
Sure, certainly. So, again, just to remind people, if you want to basically sponsor me by being your registered voter in Watsonville, the city of Watsonville, and you want to sponsor my argument against the cannabis business tax in the city of Watsonville, please send me a text at 408-891-9677.
And I suppose you can also be reached for more information at that number, too.
Certainly.
Thank you, Mike, and we will get back to you, you know, and when we have more time. I'm kind of rushing through to kind of catch up with stuff, but let's try it when we've got more time.
Okay, no problem.
All right.
Thanks for your time.
Thank you. And phone lines are open, 427-3772, 427-3772. If you'd like to comment on anything you've heard so far, if you have any breaking news here, which we take, I'll be in the studio for another 45 minutes. In the studio with me is Rebecca, who can give you, she can answer any questions you have, make any comments. She's working with Sin Baris. And her is also had some hands-on experience with jails, psych wards, and public defenders or pretenders, as some like to call them.
They're not all bad.
No, they aren't all bad, but they're all pretty bad in my view, in the sense that, well, I won't go into my lengthy tirade against public defenders. I think it's they're largely engaged in the business of getting people to plea bargain.
Yeah, that's the way the system's set up. It's not just the public defenders.
It's a lie. It's supposed to be trial by jury. It's supposed to be proof beyond a reasonable doubt. It's all these. It's supposed to be we don't shoot blacks, because we can and get away with it. But we have exactly the opposite happening. It's supposed to be a real choice in elections. Instead, you got two corporate crap heads running for the presidency. That's been my view of this, and I'll stick to it. But if listeners can call in with whatever views they have. Today was a kickoff party, unfortunately not a kick-out party, for Mayor Cynthia Matthews, who had her, entrance into the election charades at the Mission Street Park up on the hill. And it's over. It started at 4:30, went till 6. There will be a similar party for Steve Schnarr. And this is going to be happening on Sunday. And the details of that for those who are interested, and I will probably repeat them on Sunday, is at the home of the Pomerances. That's Ron Pomerantz and Jane Weed. Weed's a former mayor. Pomerantz is a former city council candidate. Weak-ass liberals, in my view. And no offense, Matt, Ron. It's just how I viewed you. I've never seen you and Jane standing up strongly on issues around homeless civil rights ever. And that, to me, is a litmus test. It really is. If you don't want to do that, then you don't really... then all your liberal pretensions elsewhere don't mean too much. But, one has to say that Steve Schnarr, who I know personally, I've seen him around, we've talked, he's tried to fight for the rights of bike riders and also to some extent hold city officials accountable and the police department accountable when they, for instance, stole all the bikes in 2012 and decided not to forward them to the bike church for distribution to the nonprofits. And I certainly support some of the things Steve has done. And his, if you want to talk to him about his campaign, he has a website, and his campaign will be kicking off at 2 to 5 on Sunday the 21st at 215 Garkey Street. I'm not quite sure where that is, but it's got quite a name, G-H-A-R-K-E-Y, Garkey Street. And I will be renewing that, repeating this announcement on Sunday, and hopefully I may be able to get him to call in and talk a little bit about his platform. I had this idea of trying to get candidates as a coalition group to coalesce around one issue. So instead of having a bunch of people preening themselves and saying, look at me, I'm better than the other candidate, I will stand up for this, you know, instead of people fighting against each other, have a coalition specifically focused around an issue like rent control, which is an obvious thing that's needed. I've talked to silver-tongued Steve Plaich about this, and he, I think he went through a little bit of the Rotkin retread argument. Rotkin is a former mayor who said he once supported rent control, but he can't do anything about it now because they voted it down in 1982. And that was his excuse for not doing anything when he was on the city council, except destroying rent control for the two mobile home parks in town, Clearview Court and the court that was on that's on the outskirts of town to the far west. And that these two kickoff campaigns are happening. One of them already did happen. But what do you think? You can always give me your thoughts. I mean, Huff is often, that's the organization I work with, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom. It's taken positions on the city council candidates. Some of them have been supported by Huff, although our support is of dubious worth in terms of, we have no financial kick, and we don't have we're not a large group. We've gotten smaller and smaller, in fact. However, I think we are a principled group, and for years have been fighting for some really basic issues around police accountability, city council accountability, and basic human rights for poor people outside and inside as well, actually. So let's see if this will play here. We might be able to hear some more of this interview. And I should ask our guest here if she has any thoughts about any of the issues I've raised that she wants to mention.
You know, something that I just wanted to bring up while I was here with you was this, you know, medical care in the jail, and they are renewing the contract with the current medical provider. And that's an opportunity for the public to kind of show that things aren't okay, that there are people that care, that, you know. So there's a Board of Supervisors meeting coming up on September 13th. If you care about this issue, you might want to check out the Sin Barres website, sinbarres.org, or check out our Facebook page. We have a letter that we sent out, and we'll be putting some other publicity materials on the internet, and you can kind of look at those and maybe contact your supervisor or the sheriff and let them know that, you know, you feel that it shouldn't be a death sentence to be sent to the jail.
And what is the name of this fine group that currently is executing people with inadequate care?
California Forensic Medical Group is the for-profit medical care provider at the jails here.
And are you suggesting an alternate group?
It's kind of bleak, you know. Yeah, the incentives are really not good with a for-profit group. It doesn't look like, you know, 4 years ago, it was when it was outsourced from the county. I'm interested. I've heard Sheriff Hart talk about why he thought that was done. I don't know, you know, what the story is there. But, you know, the incentives are not very good with having, you know, medical care for profit in
the
jail.
So previously it was a county-run program?
Yeah, it was the County Health Services Agency that was responsible for medical care.
Do we have any indication that they were better than this private group?
I don't have any...
Sinbaris, let's get busy. We need some stats here. If you're going to go after this current group of incompetents, you need to show, A, to give an option, an alternative, or at least to, you know, it'd be good to get some history of what's going on.
Yeah, it's, you know, I think there's inherently issues with having, you know, medical care be provided behind closed doors and not have, you know, transparency about what's going
on. Was there any transparency in prior to 2012 when the county was doing the medical services?
I wasn't here. I don't know, but
I
doubt it.
I don't know either. I was here.
I doubt it.
I should have known, and I don't. Let's see if I can actually get this machine to work and we can hear the rest of this interview. And anytime you want to interrupt with any thoughts, please let me know.
Okay.
You might ask him what the ultimate outcome of this was, and also give him my phone number if he wants to talk to me. I can do an anonymous hearing or discussion with him.
And what I'm talking about here with Nancy Eaton is this report of the 75-year-old man trying to watch to pick up the van for the 80-year-old guy who was in the hospital with a heart condition or whatever, and then himself being driven to the hospital by an assault, being, you know, essentially finding himself facing what seemed to be, by his account, vigilante violence. This, of course, is a second or third-hand story and should be understood from that perspective. But given the kind of climate that is happening with the county banning all RVs unless you get a permit from the sheriff and you are connected with a resident and you are parked near the residence of that person in the county, after that sort of the arrogance of the county in doing that, when the city has just had the mat pulled out from under its feet by the Coastal Commission in a hearing a week or two ago, actually, it was last week, a week and a day ago, where they ruled that they were not going to give a permit without a closer hearing on the whole issue, making sure there were alternate spaces for people to go with RVs who are living in them, making sure that there was a real reason in terms of real crime problems, not just fanciful accounts or anecdotal accounts from individuals with apparently a NIMBY interest in driving away poor people from their neighborhoods.
He wants to take it to court, you know, because it, you know, it's...
Yeah, that's fine, even if he wants to take it to court, if he wants it publicized on the radio, he should give me a call.
Okay, yeah, he said it was okay if I talked to you, so...
Well, that's good.
Okay.
And then the other issue I have for you is, let's talk a little bit about, you know, the situation where you originally contacted me a few months ago when you were evicted from MH Can for having your son in a vehicle outside while you were getting food. And
MH Can, for those who don't know, is Mental Health Clients Action Network.
Sarah Leonard claimed that you had done this before a number of times, and that she had warned you, and that you weren't doing it. Yeah, that was your contention. But now you're getting back in MH Can, but they're making some requirements, right?
Yeah, I have to be at least over two blocks away. I got me a granny cart, so I walked, you know, kind of far, because I have to have a shade spot, too, for my dog, because I have a dog, and for my sons, if they do come in my vehicle at all. I got to have them in the shade, you know, because that car would get really hot. So.
Well, you know, you could have your sons euthanized, and then you could go in disguise so no one would know who you are. I mean, this kind of seems pretty outrageous.
That's my attempt at dry humor. I was pretty pissed to hear about this exclusion of Nancy Eaton from MH Can, even though I got a more reasonable-sounding explanation from Sarah Leonard. The fact that the policy has not changed, that people are being made to park blocks away who are themselves disabled, to me, in order to pander to the fears of nearby residents or businesses or police officers who are rounding up and soliciting complaints, such as Officer Ken Deeg was reportedly doing, It's outrageous, and I cannot contain my sarcasm.
I do have a physical disability, you know, herniated disc in my back, but I figured walking probably wouldn't hurt me too much as long as I had something I could roll it in, so...
I know that you mentioned before that you were concerned that there was an edict from the MHCAN that people couldn't be across the street in the bus stop and wait there.
Yeah, they're worried. Yeah, they got something up in there now that says about that they were having problems, you know, with neighbors about the, you know. So they're trying to make it so people aren't seen down, walk down on the street, sit in places close by or anything.
So you also mentioned that there...
And one of the problems here is that MHCAN was serving 200 people, and then the neighbors and so forth started cracking down, or the police started cracking down, or a variety of different groups started cracking down. The reports are not too clear, but the crackdown is pretty definite. At least it was felt in MHCAN, because MHCAN reduced its services to 50 people a day, which apparently was what they originally got a permit for, but they were serving, and I think properly serving, a much greater number of people. And there were no complaints at the planning department regarding any specific problems that came up. And that's what makes the whole crackdown and shutdown and exclusion of 150 people, and even more than that, because you have to have a certain number of these people have to have psychiatric diagnoses. Almost everybody has to have a psychiatric diagnosis to get in there now. But the burden on people, or the cutback of services for people who are actually productively using MHCAN seems to me to be a real shame. And the real problem is to fight this in some way, and MHCAN has been reluctant to do this. I guess they've gotten a little more, we're going to hear, I believe, in this interview later, that they're now beginning to believe they can fight back, but it was my understanding from secondary sources that even the board was not allowing, you know, was discouraging people from publicly denouncing any kind of police department, real estate pressure on them, or neighborhood pressure on them. Because literally, according to the accounts I've heard, firsthand accounts, neighbors and police were going out with cameras and taking pictures of MHCAN people coming and going. And for people who have mental health conditions, some of which are labeled paranoia, for instance, this is a nice way of driving people even crazier than they are claimed to be in the first place. So, let's hear some more.
Requiring you to go back to a psychologist and get proof that you had a mental health designation, since I guess they're now limited to people who have mental health designations to help them as clients, right?
Yes, they've gone back to being more strict about that, too. So, but I did have when I was a teenager, I had some... So I had to go way back in my history, you know, about that, too. So, but...
This is all part of a general crackdown, which not only is being done by Take Back Santa Cruz vigilantes, the city council passing repressive laws, but it's also being replicated by the homeless services and churches themselves. So out at the homeless, what I call the homeless lack of services center, they have, it looks like a sort of a prison camp. They got a fenced-in area, you have to go past a guard gate, there are first-alarm security patrols there. Much of the time the area is closed. There's a no-impact zone around the MHCAN. And all of these things severely impact people. And, of course, they've cut off all meals, unless you happen to be in the programs. It used to be, this was originally set up to provide meals for the poor people outside the downtown area, so they wouldn't be hanging around protesting and hanging around downtown, as we were doing in the late 80s and early 90s. And similarly, church programs are getting more repressive. You try to take food outside the Calvary Episcopal Church now, as if you take a plate of food outside, they will stop you. You have to have a little ticket to get in line. I don't know how severely that's enforced. But the whole process has become more repressive and condescending in a way, or I can't quite find the right words for this. But it's a general thing that's happening all over town and is intended to pander to a particular mindset, which has the fantasy that homeless people as a group are more criminal than housed people, that they are dirtier, although, of course, they probably are in the sense that they don't have access to showers except, you know, through the very limited services provided around noon to by the Elm, not the Elm Street Mission, but the St. Francis Soup Kitchen. And I guess now they've restored showers to people who want to use them during certain periods of time at the Homeless Lack of Services Center. But if you don't have a place to sleep, that's the biggest thing, a legal place to go, or if you won't be left alone wherever you happen to lay your head, and people are afraid that they won't be, hence we have the Freedom Sleepouts that happen every Tuesday night in front of City Hall. I guess Freedom Sleep 59 is coming up. Then you have a really difficult situation with a lot of people out there who, I guess, these conservative forces in the neighborhood simply want to drive out of town. And even if they are former Santa Cruzans who can't pay the rents, which, of course, are escalating yearly or even monthly, depending on who your landlord is. Let's hear some more from Nancy.
So, have you heard of anybody else recently being evicted? I know we mentioned Ronaldo had a problem.
Yeah, I haven't seen him around for a while.
And what about others? I mean, do you see the same people there that you saw 3 or 4 months ago, or has the population changed?
There's some of them the same, and there's probably some different people. Some different. I don't know. Because it's up to 50, and they're not going to let more than 50 people in there. Because that's their new rule, because the city council or whoever makes those rules.
You never took your case to... Did you ever talk to Steve Plaich, who's the executive director, or not the executive director, he's the chair of the board of directors. I know Sarah Leonard is the executive director. Do you ever take your...
And I've asked a series of questions here, it looks like. As Rebecca pointed out, it looks like a battery issue here with this ancient machine that I have here. But that's okay, because I have a more modern machine I can use. It's an iPod. And we have some actual items to play from this. Although we are reaching, we only got 25 minutes left in the show. And again, if you have any updates yourself on what's happening out there on the streets, do call in 427-3772, and we'll give you a chance to ponder this during this musical interlude.
Rise when religions used to justify an endless list of human rights denied in the name of liberty. Tea party on the Capitol lawn, and the Christian terrorists are singing along, getting ready for the race war. US corporations. So when they dump the
tea in Boston. It was an attack against the corporation. So I don't see the connection between that story and yours. And Chris, the addicts and the Boston dead weren't fighting for a white nation. They were fighting an occupation like the Iraq and Afghan wars. Tea party on the Capitol lawn, asking you which side you're on, drawing battle lines in this country.
And that's Tea Party by Ryan Harvey. You can find it on YouTube. I've had some catching up to do, so there has been a couple of freedom sleeps in the last, freedom sleepouts actually is what I call them, in front of City Hall on Tuesday night. They're on the sidewalk, and they're going to be having another one this next Tuesday, I believe. Here's some interviews from Freedom Sleepout 57, which happened on August 9th, Nagasaki Day, in fact. The day that the U.S. dropped its second atomic bomb on a defenseless civilian population in Japan, something that the government officials have never taken any responsibility for, as they towed around nuclear weapons on their belt, risking the lives of every one of us and everyone we know. So let's hear a little of that from some protesters who are trying to restore the right to sleep, or establish the right to sleep for poor people in Santa Cruz, where it's illegal after 11 o'clock at night to fall asleep in a vehicle, on any public property, and on much private property. Although police don't enforce this except when they choose to, everyone has to be worried. They can't sleep in safe groups. It means women and vulnerable people can't sleep in well-lighted areas for fear they're going to be ticketed by the police with 189 tickets now, although don't quite remember the exact amount. So I'm here with the irascible, actually not so irascible, Dreamcatcher, and what's happening, Dreamcatcher? Anything to note?
Yes, I got a brand new slide honer harmonica.
Yeah, I see that. Can you play it, though? I guess it's playing, so to speak. Any citations, experiences? Meaningful relationships?
Yes. A couple more tickets I can give you. But, you know, I just sat too long in the wrong place with somebody else because I was trying to school them on where we can sit and not sit.
Uh-huh.
So I take the ticket and I promise the officer to clean it up, and that's okay because I'm okay. So anyway.
You charge him $20 an hour at least for the cleaning up job. Not your job.
I charge the other guy, really.
It really annoys me to have this notion that homeless people are expected to keep pristine areas when they are driven out of, they have no bathrooms at night. Actually, there are two porta potties now available in Santa Cruz, but no bathrooms at night that are open. And they have no place to wash up, go to sleep, and they're expected to somehow maintain middle class standards in the midst of the situation. But, Rebecca, you had some thoughts on the MH Can situation.
Yeah, just a couple of things. There is a, I forget what it's called, like a zoning hearing, or the group, the planning board, I guess, or planning commission, whatever, Santa Cruz, is having some kind of closed session coming up on Monday.
Is this the city or the county, do you know?
The city. And they don't announce the subject of it in advance. It may or may not be related to MH Can, but... you know, as far as the kind of whispered rumblings of that things might be going down, that might be related. So, I think MH Can does some really important work in the community, and there, you know, there are a lot of people that would like to, you know, be able to get services they can't because of the city, not because MH Can doesn't want to provide services. This may be a further move on their part to, try to drive MH Can out or limit what can be done there. So
Do you know when this hearing is?
Monday night. I guess they have to have some kind of announcement to the public about what it is right beforehand. So I think Monday at 5 is when it's going down at City Hall, was what I heard. So they've not required to announce in advance what it's about, but there is a brief period, I guess.
Actually, I think they are. If it's a public hearing, they have to show an agenda at least to what, so people
right.
know what's on.
But in advance of their meet, they can announce it right before they meet. I guess
72 hours.
I don't know.
I'm going to look it up right now to see if there is a planning commission agenda for a meeting next Monday, and. We'll find out.
Okay. But it's just a frustrating situation, not to have to turn people away that are interested in receiving services. Everyone does sign an agreement about, MHCAN does try to be a good neighbor, and that involves, people who are members agreeing to certain things when they become a member, and I think people are just trying to enforce that and make sure that, we're not needlessly creating problems or being perceived as creating problems in the neighborhood.
I got to tell you, have you spent much time at MHCAN recently?
Yes.
Okay. Well, I haven't, so I'm not in as much of a position as you are to make any authoritative statements, but I've got to tell you, this buying somebody else's bullshit about your not being a good neighbor and somehow trying to meet their fascistic standards, unless you have seen real problems that have created real difficulties with the neighbors, is not a good strategy, in my view. In other words, the notion that you should give credibility to false claims about MHCAN because you want to be nice to the neighbors or be a good neighbor by accepting their false narration about what's happening, to me is the wrong way to go. And so have you seen any actual problems out there that you think people can reasonably even consider the kinds of restrictions they've already put on MHCAN, where it's MHCAN that has restricted its cutback 200 to 50 because they are afraid that they're going to be penalized if they don't, because that's what their permit says. But before,
yeah, they're trying to follow the terms of the permit
for
the city.
They were having 200, and the permit said exactly the same thing. And there were no complaints on the record at the Planning Commission about this. And yet, fear has dictated the sudden decision to shrink the services, start requiring people to park blocks away, and then, this so-called good neighbor policy, as though MHCAN hasn't always been a good neighbor.
I don't think that the good neighbor policy is anything new. I think that that's been part of MHCAN since I've been familiar with MHCAN.
Well, no, I mean, there's nothing wrong with being a good neighbor, but if your good neighbor policy suddenly involves parking blocks away, not sitting nearby, cutting back services, that seems to me to be a very peculiar way to try to be a good neighbor, unless what they're really doing is just trying to shovel yourself into a small box so that you can tease out a smile on the face of people who have a much different and much more hostile agenda, if you see what I mean.
I don't think that's what's going on, and I don't know what the facts are as far as the situation with the parking. But there was a discussion today at the Mental Health Advisory Board about there being, people out, in other areas of the city that don't have things to do that would benefit a lot of people to be able to access the services that MHCAN provides, and that because of this situation going on now where the terms of the permit are as they are and it looks like people are trying to enforce them.
The terms of the permit have always been what they are, and yet 200 people were being served.
I think it did change.
I don't think so. I've never been aware of that. Do you have, I mean, unless you have some particular...
I would have to do a little research to double check on that.
Let me know. I'd be interested in that.
But I, I, believe that as of a certain date,
Sarah
there was
Leonard
a change
has
to
never
the
claimed the permit has changed, nor has any MH CAN client. They just claim that it's being more strictly enforced. That's what I've heard. But I could be wrong. If you've got new information, I'd like to hear it.
I believe that I'm not sure when it was changed, but I believe that it was changed, and that they're concerned that.
Why do you say that? I mean, what's your information about that? Where did you get that from?
Because that was my what I gathered from some conversations I had
with
people in MHCAN.
They told you that there was a time when the permit allowed 200 people.
I don't know what
See,
the exact number
so.
Was.
I've never heard that because that's what Sarah tells me they used to serve, 150 to 200 people a day.
I don't know what the exact number was prior to this change, but
I'm saying is you don't have information specifically.
I don't have the exact information.
I'm not saying you're wrong because I'd like to know what the truth is. It's just my understanding is different. And I'd love to be corrected. We need the correct information. That's really important.
Yeah, I don't see why. I mean, no one at MHCAN wants to turn people away. No one wants to, you know.
Heads of the program are concerned about saving their program. And also, when you put people who have, you know, are sensitive people who are themselves mental health clients under pressure, they will try to take a leadership role, which may become repressive because they're trying to do the right thing.
I think, you know, everyone is, I think that people are trying to do the right thing, and people that are told no and turned away that haven't, you know, historically that hasn't happened, get really upset.
Well, I don't think she was turned away because of the numbers. She was, this is all, the whole issue with Nancy Eaton has to do with her being in a vehicle, with her having her sons in the vehicle and so forth. But anyway, I think that issue about the number of people and whether they're not allowing people to park nearby.
I can't speak to the parking situation. I think that may be a distortion.
Find out, because it's not. Sarah Leonard has never denied it when I've talked to her about it. So,
And
I don't think Nancy Eaton is falsely giving us an account. But, you know, it is one account we're hearing here. And I've invited Sarah to talk on the air. She has declined to do so far. But, you know, actually she was in the studio once in the past. And I'm going to invite her on again so we can clarify this up. And also, frankly, mobilize support for MHCAN. I mean, don't get me wrong. I'm a supporter of MHCAN. I'm just not supporter of a policy that talks about fantasies about being a good neighbor when the good neighbor policy involves being, you know, adopting a set of fascistic standards or standards that are trying to cater to people who really want you out of the area.
I think there is some of that going on, and I mean,
well, let's try to get some more facts on that, because I think it's important, and I will again, I'll send Sarah an email about this and ask her if she wants to be on the air again. I think she's been reluctant to do this because, you know, she doesn't want to upset the apple cart. And I think people should show up at this planning hearing Monday night at 5 p.m. I'm looking in the city of Santa Cruz for the agenda to see if it actually is available. Here's the current agenda, meeting agendas and minutes. And we'll see if we can actually find it in the next 7 days. And there is a planning commission meeting. We're talking about a planning commission, right?
I believe so.
And it's on August 18th, which would be
today.
Today. Uh-oh. Did we miss the meeting here?
I just I haven't looked on the website. I have the information that I was given. So.
Yeah, let's take a look. Let's see, maybe we can see what the agenda is. It's tonight. It's tonight in City Council Chambers. It started at 7. Maybe when you leave this meeting, you can check it out and see what the story is. And the agenda is here. And let's take a look at what the agenda is. It's there's downtown recovery plan amendments.
So you're looking at it as a regular meeting. I was told that there was a special meeting happening on Monday that was a closed session.
A closed session. Closed session is only relevant for litigation and personnel matters. So I don't know why MHCAN would come up at a closed session, but...
I
don't know. You know more than I do about this, perhaps. Let's see if there's anything in the next... Next month. Next 30 days. Planning Commission. The only meeting scheduled is tonight's meeting. And if it's a closed session, it would still be here. You wouldn't be able to go to it, but you would know it's happening.
Well, I'll keep my eye on that. I haven't checked their website before, so I don't know what the rules are on that.
Yeah, check it out. I mean, you know, I'm just kind of doing this off the cuff, but that's what I'm finding. And you went to the Mental Health Advisory Board today?
Yeah.
What anything come out of that particular discussion?
You know, they had a woman there who is part of a group of people who try to keep the levee looking nice. And she...
You mean free of the troublesome homeless people?
No, it was more about picking up trash. And she wasn't interested in really driving people away, but she wanted to...
She didn't talk about illegal camping or anything like that.
I mean, she's aware that there are people living there.
She didn't talk about eliminating that problem?
No, she wasn't really focused on that.
Good. Glad to hear it.
She wanted to know how she could get help for people that she perceived as needing help.
By the which she means people whose behavior disturbs her, or people who are hungry and looking for food, or people who are looking for shelter. What is she talking
about? No, I think people that to her seem to be in distress and not mentally capable of helping themselves.
Okay.
And she seemed like a very nice lady, and like she really wanted, and you know, sadly, there aren't, I mean, the first thing to do would be to find housing for people, right? Well, that's not really going to happen in Santa Cruz.
or shelter or campgrounds, which also isn't going to happen in Santa Cruz, or stop the police from harassing them, which also doesn't seem to have much certainty of happening in Santa Cruz either.
Yeah, so, you know, what kind of help is available that's the kind of help that really help people. But, you know,
you might,
I mean,
volunteer with Food Now Bombs. That's a possibility. Food Now Bombs, by the way, is something you can volunteer with. It between 4 and 6 every Saturday and Sunday at the post office, they serve the carrots and vegetables and actually a lot of dishes. Have you been to the Food Now Bombs meals?
I haven't. I like to go sometimes. I often have a schedule conflict with that.
Uh-huh.
So... But, yeah, it just, you know, it just came up that a lot of, you know, homeless, mentally ill people or people with, you know, psychiatric diagnoses, they're people that have been served by MHCAN and that may not be able to count on going there now. And there's not really a place for people to hang out when you're homeless. You know, it's sad. You know, I mean, the places that you're welcome are very limited. And one place that homeless people are welcome is at MHCAN.
50 of them, and don't hang around outside, and don't park nearby, and don't sit across the street at the bus stop, according to Nancy Eaton and a couple of other MHCAN clients. So maybe you could find out exactly what the rules are and see if I'm exaggerating or in any way misrepresenting, because I'd like to know.
I think there are rules about not loitering or hanging around the neighborhood before and after the place is open. And then as far as the parking issue, I think the issue is more about her having her sons in the car. And I don't really know. So, but I think it's just an attempt to enforce the rules that are consistent with what's, you know, allowed in the community.
I don't think so. I think you have a right to loiter on the sidewalks all you want, particularly if you're not allowed inside the damn building. That's what happens. That's why people do loiter on the sidewalks. And to claim otherwise because you want to enforce a middle-class worldview of the sidewalk without providing middle-class resources, to me, is both unrealistic, cruel, and ultimately vicious and unconstitutional. So I don't have any sympathy for that perspective, but I can understand that it is a prevalent Santa Cruz notion.
Well, and I think there's a tension there, because when you're under attack and you're facing the possibility of, you know, your organization closing down, if there's people that are, you know, working against you, what are you supposed to do?
It's a very good question, and all agencies, all groups that, for example, when they faced McCarthyism in the 50s, some of them decided they'd cooperate with the government, because that's the way they could survive. They kicked the communists out of their organizations. They got rid of the radicals and the leftists. They, you know, they did. That's how they proceeded. And what do? Well, you have to find ways of fighting it. You organize against it. You point out that there are constitutional rights involved for people. You set up alternate organizations. I can talk a lot about ideas about how to fight about it, but I'm not a very good organizer myself, you know.
I think ultimately there you need to address the intolerant attitudes of the people that are behind trying to push people out, you know.
Well, it's not that you have to address them.